This is Prime Minister's Question Time.
So there's the tit, right?
Yes.
Are you allowed to stay at tit when you decide to run for Congress as the founder of tit?
So because America is an airtight country written by, it's a very recent democratic republic kind of society.
Oligarchy.
That's been modeled by many other countries around the world, and sometimes intervened by many other countries in the world to be a really airtight system for politics. There's really nothing stopping him from running the company, doing everything he's already doing.
On top of running for Congress.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if he was like going to hey, deuces, my guys.
It is extremely unethical for him to be running a news network. He has he basically be complaining about the Hillary Clinton problem. He has an establishment media behind his back. So, basically, Cenk has done a video on TYT. There's a whole thing explaining about it. I don't feel like explaining about it here, but the gist about it is that
he just yells off course a bunch of times and gets his point through.
No, but here's the thing. He's going to not be on the show as much because he's running for Congress. So,
okay, all right, that's what I figured.
Arguably, TYT will be more watchable.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense, though, that, A, he needs time to build up a campaign and everything.
Yeah. There's a lot about the campaign. So,
make this usable.
The best way to, if we enter the DM Evans and Associates legal corner here, the best way to kind of explain this is that at the company, there are guardrails. I, in my non-legal, more economic opinion, would describe these as landmines. But
they're like Vietnam landmines. Like that shit's still gonna. That's just gonna be there for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's gonna be a few decades.
Basically, when Cenk is on TYT as a host, he is not supposed to talk about his campaign. When Cenk is running his campaign, he is not supposed to talk about TYT that much as a host. He can talk about here's my past experience as a CEO of a company. We did this, this, and this, and that's about where he stops. He no longer has editorial control of anything at the company, and has control of the main show.
It's gonna get saucy.
Yeah,
I'm so down.
So that's Cenk as a host. Mm-hmm. There's me as a proprietor to TYT Network as Dan from the Internet. When I am using TYT properties or services or anything like that, I'm not supposed to use that platform to advocate for Cenk because that
makes sense.
Some TYT resources.
Yeah, a conflict of interest.
Specifically. On non-TYT properties.
Which we are not.
On which Audioface is a production of Syndicate 23.
Political report.
Nothing, just Syndicate 23. proprietorship.
Proprietorship. Okay.
We are able to say whatever we want to as an entity on this show.
Okay.
Including so we can advocate for him. We can talk shit on him.
Now you get Dan's true feelings.
And now that he's running for the race, and there's a number of people who have been watching the show who are now listeners of Audioface, and we're doing one of our fan favorite segments, No Chill Island.
Oh, Jesus.
And now that Sean W. Suarez is armed with this information.
Oh, Christ.
Let us begin the episode.
Oh, no. I'm worried. I don't even want to do No Chill Island. I want to delete the segment.
Hello, humans, and welcome to Audioface. We are an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And this is going to be really fun. This is episode 121. We are doing No Chill Island 14. Pretty wild. This is a...
It's going to be bad. There's a lot of landmines.
This is like a preteen on Xbox Live. There's a kind of...
Oh, no. Lengthy. No, it is not a preteen on Xbox Live. You're not a... The people can't handle preteens on Xbox Live 2007, all right? That's a chat room that...
There are memes about that are coming back right now, actually, so you wouldn't know.
Things were said on those.
We have a jam-packed episode. We have a lot of singles.
Lots of music.
Yes, we are going to talk about that in just a moment. We have reviews from... We have Posthumous Peep,
yep.
Lil Peep. We have Everybody's Everything. We have Lady Antebellum with the album Ocean, because we do a lot of audio. There's a lot of music here.
And we have our 6-hour album of DJ Shadow.
DJ Shadow's Our Pathetic Age. And because there's a lot of juice, there's a lot of sauce, there's No Chill Island 14. which
lots
is
of juice.
Gonna be
juice loose.
I'm gonna be spending an entire day editing this fucking podcast because we're gonna be talking about all the stuff that happened at Camp Flogna with Drake getting booed off stage.
Oh, I can't.
We're gonna talk about Kanye West's shenanigans. we're gonna talk about the most lucrative bullet shot in 2019. Sorry, the most lucrative dream bullet and literally a landmine of content. More Lizzo lawsuits and more Moby tattoos. This is going to be a jam-packed episode.
Oh no, that's when I get bleeped.
And we're going to have to come up with an arbitrary scale on the fly, Sean, because I am going to try to host my best. Because I do want to go through a couple more announcements before we start the podcast. We're going to get to Lil Peep. Singles, Lil Peep. It's going to be pretty quick. But we just did a repeat episode of Beck, and we did a special thing where Sean kind of hosted it, and we stitched together.
Like a arbitrary scale.
Yeah, we stitched together the old episode of about 100 episodes ago of Beck, where we talked about his history, and we stitched together the Colors review because we had recorded that episode as a lead-in to the Colors review. So now you get Beck's entire discography, you get our opinions of it because we are an esteemed podcast.
It's very relevant. It's extremely relevant.
I think we may have done this before, actually.
But after the NFL one, think we've done something similar, but I don't think we've gone over all of sports. Arbitrary scale this week is sports fights. We'll get more into it when we do the albums, and I'll explain it. But anyways, let's go straight to singles.
No, I need to explain some programming really fast. It's going to be really fast. We did that Colors thing. It's going to be really cool because next week we have Beck and Coldplay releasing albums.
Sold out, bitches.
Sean just recorded that because we're also going to be releasing in the middle of the week a Coldplay episode where we're going to go into why Sean does not like Coldplay, but he does.
I don't.
That's going to be very interesting. We're going to have a special episode over Thanksgiving. We're going to have a lot of stuff over December, but let's just get into the music, all right? Yes. First off, we have a single, the first single since Billie Eilish's like big album, big splash release has come out.
Everything I Wanted.
Yes.
And goddamn, is it good.
It's a...
Holy shit.
It's a real banger.
Oh my lord.
Maybe Billie...
It's a 4 minute song. God, just... She's ridiculously good.
It's incredible, the work that she's doing. I had a dream. I got everything I wanted. But when I wake up, I see you with me. And you say, as long as I'm here, no one can hurt you. Don't wanna lie here, but you can. Yeah, this
is one of my favorite. Okay, in these little these three singles, two of them are like my favorites of an entire year just right now. So this is already a good podcast.
This is going to be a really fun episode.
Yeah, but Everything I Wanted, she has that really deep electronic sound, but it's a little muffled thing with the piano, and she's just going over kind of just a little storytelling type thing with the song. And it's very deep and powerful, most like her music, but it's slow. And it just keeps building and building, but it stays slow the entire song, which is a little, I wouldn't say too different for her to do, but in the pop world, you don't hear it that often done in that way.
And
man, she's always doing different shit. So I love it. Yeah. It's fantastic.
I cannot commend her enough. And seriously. She works with her brother too, but like it's gotta like...
That family's got hella music in them.
Yeah. It's so great because it starts off very small. Lyrically, it's got twists in it. Sonically, it's got twists in it. It's like, it's pop music, but it's being taken to its like extreme.
It was cool. There's one part where she says where I'm under, like I'm screaming underwater, and it had an effect of where she could tell it's muffling her voice.
Yeah.
Part of the song.
It's a pretty popular song. It's a pretty popular effect in pop music.
Yeah.
And it's often used even to directly reference like being underwater, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's
in the context of that song.
In a really emotional way. Mm. So it's really like a nicely done pop track.
Now we got.
Gotta love it. Then we have New Breed. By James BKS featuring Q-Tip, Lil Sims, and Idris Elba. Noted rapper Idris Elba, because we've known about this career for a minute.
Okay, apparently Idris Elba raps.
It
sounds like Anderson .Paak.
Yeah.
Like hella sounds like Anderson .Paak.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing to me. We didn't breathe and we really don't care.
kick off and come hit the block.
Melanin glowing for the world to see. Your insecurity's not concerning me. I mean, God is a woman, that's my firm belief. And they wanna burn it down to the third degree. Grab a hold of the locks and insert the key. How many leaders does it take to be free? Don't wanna be Jack trying to get out the box. Should be stuck in there if you don't know how much it's all cost. Whoa, many layers is what's underneath.
Yeah. But it's like, okay, now this is, it's a thing that you can tell when really good albums and artists start to change directions of music. That's what it sounds like it's starting to do, which I'm all for.
Yeah.
But at the same point, it's okay.
I think it would have done better with like 50% of the artists.
Oh yeah, I think it was just too much with all four of them. But
yeah,
at the same time, it wasn't that terrible Justin Bieber, DJ Khaled one, where that one deserves awards of, you know,
terribleness.
Yeah, exactly.
This was really great.
But this was good. It's just I normally don't like tracks with, you know, four features on it, because it's a little. So much.
It's too many humans, if you will.
You know, because that happened on humans all the time.
Yeah.
And then we go to my boy.
Neon Indian
who I don't know how many times I've talked about on this podcast, but he hasn't really released much recently.
Yeah. We've talked about him
in the podcast.
Bit,
I did a recommendations for him, and he released Toyota Man, and holy shit.
It's a music video.
Is this a banger of a track?
The song is really good. The music video is really animated. It's like, it's done in film, kind of. It's actually shot on old Kodak.
Yeah.
And part of the animations done for it look like Schoolhouse Rock.
But it
like
does.
Done in a cool way from the
80s. This is his first.
And political as shit.
This is his first track he's done in all Spanish. He's from Monterrey and then Mexico, and then moved up to where he is in Texas. And
so he's got some sayings.
He's got
some takes.
Things. And it, like, so you know us in Audio Face, how we've been yelling at artists when they go political. It's like, okay, you need to know what you're talking about and don't whine. He did everything here that we've been yelling at for everybody to do for years. He didn't whine. He just told, it's a little biography. He said normally he's apolitical, but he said, you know what? I can't not be political about my
identity.
Biography, because I moved up here from Mexico, and like there's so much shit going on with my family and everything, so this is what happened. But he made it into a funk groove pop weird anthem and just did his own thing, stayed true to himself, sung it in Spanish, which is awesome. But,
yeah,
the lyrics in it are awesome. There's parts where it's, we came here to study, we came here to work. We are all Americans.
Yeah.
And there's kids chasing around a piano of Donald Trump, and it's hilarious. In the music video.
We also have to talk about the part in the middle where it's like, here's how a disposable labor force
works.
Yes,
that part. And remember, kids, the way to build an economy on a disposable workforce is to invite them into the work and then kick them out when the work is done. You know, you can't even do unions? Now you get the point. That line alone deserves a nomination for the
Vince Staples Woke Award. That's just where
you
for.
Can.
The music video gets it, but the line alone.
But the line,
is like
just
good.
And it's so subtle.
We're gonna put that in, yeah.
Oh, you have to put that in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, I love Neon Indian so much. I think he is criminally underrated for his albums. We have our top 50 albums of the 2010s, which we'll do at the end of the year, and Neon Indian's 100,000,000% gonna be on there.
Yeah,
like, I don't know where, but there. We'll go through it.
You and one of my other really good indie plug friends that I like talking to introduced me to Neon Indian.
Good.
And,
I fucked with whoever that is.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. He's really good, man.
I fucked with it.
Yeah, it's very good. And now, as promised, thank you for bearing with that long intro. Thank you for bearing with the singles that we talked about.
We've got
Posthumous Peep. Let's do it.
Lil Peep. This is, yeah. So he had two Posthumous Peeps, correct?
Yeah,
because his Come Over When You're Sober Part 2 happened like a year after he died, correct?
Yes.
But he was already, that one album was pretty much made.
Yeah,
and
that
then,
album was pretty close to made.
There's
like a lot of like, Lil Peep was part of the SoundCloud generation, like really like one of the monarchs of it.
Yeah,
the
he's the emo, emo rock sound into SoundCloud rap, which there's a couple tracks that I like from it, especially Save That Shit, I think is actually a very good song, which is on his first album we reviewed in 2017, before you know, overdosing. Yeah. But anyways, everybody's everything. It's quite long.
19 songs long. I think 57 minutes.
Yeah.
It is quite a lot, has a lot to offer.
It's a
and
lot.
It's made that's a trend with the albums and the episode and everything.
Yeah, they're long, which is long. Normally they haven't been long like this, but these three have all been over or at least 55 and over.
Yeah.
You know, AARP card back in the day before people started living too long.
Senior coffee,
yeah. So
this is made with a lot more of like the scraps, little bits and pieces that came from songs.
And a lot
of producers came onto this album to kind of build the
scraps. Hell, because there this first like three or four tracks, I think, like the ones with Rich the Kid, Lil Tracy, Diplo, Gabe, those all...
Gabe with a three.
Yeah, Gabe with a three, because... Anyways, all of those sound like they're produced by someone else, because they sound way too trappy and, like, fucked with the auto-tune and stuff. His earlier work doesn't sound like that as much at all. So that's why... I remember I was talking to you this yesterday, where I go, this is to me where a posthumous album is very posthumous, because there's other people producing it in a way that he doesn't have a voice on it. Because now it sounds like it's somebody else doing work on a vocal track that he made.
Right.
Kind of like, you know, Michael Jackson's work, where Justin Timberlake did a track in like 2014 or something, and it's totally different than what it would normally sound like if he was still alive.
Yeah.
If, you know, right. Fentanyl didn't exist. And that's my problem with a lot of the songs here. There are definitely tracks on here that sound more like him. I think Rockstars Text Me Princess, Moving On, those tracks are kind of more in the realm of that emo trap SoundCloud sound, which he's known for doing. And it's a very niche thing that not too many people do and are good at, I like to say.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely one of the pioneers
and
of
it
doing
was, and it was good, and I've said that before. I do like
some of the
stuff.
And part of the reason it was really good was, like, it was a kind of harken to exactly what a generation really liked, like an up-and-coming generation,
exactly.
Because it was a mix of 2000s pop. Like, one of the things that kind of amazed me was the song White Tea.
White Tea,
is
yeah, Lil Tracy.
It's a sample from the Postal Service.
Yeah, it is.
I'm like, oh my god,
like,
I haven't
heard this
shit.
That song goes hard.
Yeah.
Those are actually the three tracks of Lil Tracy, White Tee, Cobain, and actually four tracks, Witchblades and Walk Away as the Door Slams, which is an acoustic track. Those are the last four songs. Very, very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good. I just wish, literally, if you got rid of like the first five songs, which to me don't sound like anything he really made before, but it sounds like somebody came in there like, hey, I'm a producer, that he has some of his works, let's go and chop it up and get it out there. If you got rid of that, then it sounds more like a Lil Peep album to me.
Yeah, and I think, so Lil Peep was this interesting bridge of SoundCloud rap and Trap and B, which is where, if I had to like throw this album somewhere, I would call it Trap and B.
Yeah.
He was this interesting sort of mix in that there were a lot of bangers that he made that like he was known for, and I think part of the beginning of the album, and even parts of the end of the album, kind of harken back to. Like, I at least was happy that this album didn't have an XXXTentacion throwback.
Oh, that's still
like
pisses
the old
me off.
Album
and
did.
Like,
and
just not, falling down. I'm still mad about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there is a good thing. I think that the world listens to Audioface, because a lot of people, since that has come out, were saying that I'm not sure if Lil Peep would have wanted that collaboration to happen, because that was also one of those stitched together things.
It was stitched together. And I said, I remember saying that because I go, I don't, like, I've listened to interviews in it with him and everything, and he didn't sound like a dude who would want to work with someone like that.
Yeah. You know? And there's a lot of, like, so...
And that's a problem of the music industry
in
general, too. And his mom was talking about that. And actually, speaking of that, you had the little article about it, right?
So there's a little peep documentary that got released in conjunction with this album. It's telling and it's interesting. So
because it really shows a problem of music industry and drugs, especially when it's you have managers and stuff not helping out the artists, which we talked about on a plethora of here on Audio Face.
Yeah.
I actually felt really bad reading this, dude. Like, there's one on stage where he was...
The part on stage,
My God. It's just kind of heartbreaking.
Do you want me to
describe
it?
Yeah, you go.
So basically,
I don't always get choked up looking.
It's pretty bad. So it's a telling where he's on stage in a show in Los Angeles where he's on stage and basically the point is he's overdosing.
He's completely overdosing.
While he's doing the concert. So he's kind of walking around. He's mumbling the words to Hellboy, which is the song he's playing. His managers are in the background just like, should we call a fire alarm?
Yeah, but they had a throw bucket ready and they were literally thinking, I need to call a fire alarm, like to pull it or anything. And then he just snaps out of it.
He's super fucked up about it. And then like, they're basically just putting a lot of fog on stage to see if they can get out of the situation. That's right when he snaps out about it.
Oh my God.
6 months later, he overdoses and dies.
Yeah, on a tour bus.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are just, I'm covering the actual big problem of you just over covering it because you think, oh, he's a good artist, we'll make money for this or whatever, or you don't know how to deal with it. And dude, that's when you really got to get help.
To paraphrase a Boondocks episode, if you want to help Lil Peep, get some help for Lil Peep.
Get some help me help you.
No, but like literally you can see he's on this edge point. Like, that's not healthy. That's not how he should be. That's not how business people around him should be motivated to treat an artist. And it's kind of, I don't know, like a bad reflection on the music industry and how vicious it is with treating people and how kind of vicious capitalism is with extracting as much work as it can out of artists and workers and kind of not really getting anything in return, not caring about their life. It's pretty ridiculous, hashtag no politics.
It really is, and it's so sad. And I was saying, I know at first he didn't really like a lot of his music, and I'm like, I think it's actually quite good, some of his tracks. Some of it I didn't like,
but there's a couple. I think it was really hit or miss, because there's so much he was producing.
Yeah.
Like, there is more Posthumous Peep that can possibly come out this.
And it's
fine.
To me, it's a tragedy
It just sounds
in a way,
really weird.
Where it's like... Damn, if only he was alive, because you could see, I think he was going to be one of those revolutionary guys out of SoundCloud to actually make good music. Because there's a lot of SoundCloud that made really shitty music, and there's a few that made good, and he was one of the few.
Yeah, so, it's a real tragedy that
it's a super tragedy.
We lost Lil Peep to all of these sort of aspects of the world.
As Matthew Healy says, rest in peace, Lil Peep. Anyways, our arbitrary scale is sports fights.
Oh, wait, sorry, really fast. There's one last thing I want to say about the documentary.
Oh.
There is kind of a lot of fan service that's done to the album. Like, oh, he was one of the first rappers on the scene from SoundCloud to blend these things together. No, he wasn't. I mean, XXXTentacion kind of did this too. You don't want to glorify him, but it wasn't just XXXTentacion.
There were tons of artists
who were doing this to some extent. Lil Peep definitely took it further, but like, you have to give credit where credit is due. Secondly, they said that he was like one of the first people to do like face tattoos. It's like,
oh my God, yeah, I know.
Have you seen Lil Wayne?
Have you seen, that's example one. Have you looked at rap in the past 40 years?
Yeah. Like, it's pretty, so... The documentary is not perfect. I mean, it's better than a hologram tour, which I'm probably working on. But
God, don't!
I'm gonna be really. That's gonna be like peak Gen Z. There's a hologram
fucking
tour,
Lil
Peep. Okay, let's arbitrarily scale it up.
So there's sports fights because there's that infamous fight of Rudolph. I cannot think of his other name. And the dude from the Cleveland Browns, or the dudes threw off helmets and started hitting guys, and then it just turned to
Miles
a hood
Garrett.
Fight. Yeah, Miles. Yeah, and Miles, because he just turned a hood fight where the Steelers jumped on him and stomped on him, literally curb stomping him on an NFL pitch. And that is my favorite thing out of this year.
10-yard penalty.
But Also,
defense.
Miles got like Miles. Literally, the NFL said minimum you're banned for the year, 250,000 minimum. We're gonna go. We might get banned for life. You might just get executed. We don't know. But anyways, so
I mean, you already got concussions. Might just speed it up a little bit.
But so that's just
sports. This is not No Chill Island.
No, this is. But this is just sports by Fitzgerald. This to me is a solid Pedro Martinez Game 3 ALCS 2003 when he fought 72-year-old Don Henley and threw his ass on the ground. Yankees versus Red Sox. I watched that shit live and I was screaming laughing. And I was like 7 because I'm wild.
Oh my god.
I will never forget that shit. Pedro, you don't fuck with Pedro Martinez. Remember, he's charging him out. He just looks at him. He's like, throws him down. He's
oh my god. I can't really top that. I'm just going to go with your opinion. To say, now we have to always kind of loop this back to the meaning of the album. It is a...
It's a damn good album.
Yeah.
It's a damn good fight.
Damn good fight.
That's a damn good fight. Damn good album.
There's a guy on jump. Does a 75-year-old person have anything to do with death or posthumy? Or is that just... We're just going to let that settle.
We're going to let that sizzle a little bit. And you can make your form or your own opinion on it.
So, Snoop Dogg is really, really, really upset.
He's upset, as he is.
There's two modes of Snoop Dogg. There's really chill Snoop Dogg, like chilling with Martha Stewart, doing some like fun shit. Snoop Dogg.
You know, or going to a golf course and making a hood. Yeah.
Or like Instagram video.
Yeah.
I'm gonna talk some bullshit, like yell at some people. So, anyways. He says that he's really close to outing booking agents in the industry who, quote, don't want to see a black man win as a booking agent. I'll be giving up names real soon, what company they with. Don't want to see a nigga win because I connected with somebody that of a different ethnicity because I got a Mexican, a Latino working with me. It's black and brown. Y'all don't want to see that. Fuck y'all.
I mean, out them, dude.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's not like they're not there.
Go ahead. Do it.
Do it.
Drop them.
Make it saucy. On this kind of topic here, LP, the rapper from Run the Jewels, which we'll be talking about just a little bit later.
We will be.
Was on a podcast with Talib Kweli, which is like head-spinning amounts of woke, I'm sure.
Oh my god, that podcast, your brain's gonna explode on that podcast.
Talib Kweli and Tariq Ali.
I couldn't physically handle that.
My brain's still in recovery mode from taking in all these high-level important ideas.
My brain would be in recovery mode for 4 years after that podcast.
Anyways, LP was talking about that it's like white rappers' obligation to discuss race, which kind of echoes a larger point in the world where it's like black people can talk about race and how it affects them, but ultimately it's not like black people being racist to other black people, it's white people being racist to black people, and ultimately white people who are in like safe communities to other white people will do a better job of convincing white people out of their racism than like black people yelling on the streets blocking freeways.
It's like a whole kind of school of thought
that's like part of it is okay, the woke white people have to listen to the black people but then communicate what they say to the racist white people. It's not going to be the black people communicating to the racist white people.
You can't.
It's not always going to work.
You just can't. Because they literally, it's in their brains.
Yeah.
You need to have a white person. Sometimes you need to have a white to white talk, okay?
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Sometimes those talks are like, hey, you know what's like with those people.
Right? It's like, exactly.
Sometimes it's one of those talks.
It's one of those
sometimes
talks.
It can be it like works. One of those, hey, what about those people talks?
Exactly. It's like, okay, so those people, right? And it's just, it boils into a beautiful conversation. Next thing you know, they're like, huh. Maybe they aren't so bad after all. And there you go. And then we start to find lines together. And that's when Obama gets his togetherness, finally. Fucking
liberalized. Don't start with that fucking leftist buying a house in Martha's Vineyard ass. Anyways, that is pretty much LP's kind of point that...
Yeah,
he said,
I agree.
If I hadn't had rap music, I don't know, as a middle-class white kid, how long would it have taken me to be exposed to the truth? It helped me lifting of the veil. Rap's done that for a lot of people, Kweli responded. LP said, people can be fans of hip-hop, but if empathy and connection don't come with it, what's the goddamn point?
Exactly, so because that's I think youth don't get the message of a lot of, especially old school hip-hop and rap, because that's what's literally they're going on about is, especially gangster rap, is a lot of the racial tensions. So, I mean,
yeah.
Look at LA in the 80s and 90s, fucking horrible. So, but, you know, people don't listen. Anyways, Lady Antebellum has a album called Oceans, 13 songs, 47 minutes long. Why did Dan make me listen to this? But you know, it's country. I get one country album a year. Two country albums a year. And I still don't like it, but I listen to it for the people. Okay, I will give you this.
A lot of people listen to Lady Antebellum.
Actually. I will give them this. It's not bro country. Because I've talked to a lot of fans of country music, me mom included, and she hates the new country because she's like, dude, all they've seen about is blue jeans, America, guns, tractors. It's called bro country, and it's dog awful, and it's bullshit. Because she listened to stuff in like the late 80s, early 90s, and even like in the 50s and 60s. She likes that stuff. So
a little bit wholesome, but like it's...
But you know, it's decent. And then this
musically, it's like the bread and butter of country music.
Exactly. You could do a lot with it, but it's just the things that they've seen about now in country are all literally that blue jean, about like it's terrible.
It's like literally the same thing that trap does and we complain
exactly.
about.
Exactly. But for white people. Yeah. White to white here. I want to do that once in my life today.
Sean, you're working great here. You're working all the angles. You're working the Latino side. You're working the white side. It's pretty good. I'm the one feeling racially uncomfortable on this podcast.
This is why I'm glad. This is where it's nice being half and half. You get both communities. You know, you get a little.
But so it's like going into this album. There's like the most political it gets is the song "You Can Do You," which is basically just like it's like I don't even want to get involved. Simon, like you can be lefty,
there's
you can be
Switzerland,
right.
Basically, like, it's like, you know, Switzerland? They got some ideas in Switzerland. Oh, what is all this money that we found from 1939 to 1945? Cough, cough. Oh, it's over here. I found it. Here you go back. I don't know what these paintings are, but here's the paintings.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I listened up to the song Little Big Town. I got the boots. Be happy I got there. It was not terrible. It's not terrible, not great, not horrifying.
So what was boots fine or did like that was that so bad that it stopped?
It's I couldn't deal with it. That's just too much country for one man. For a man who listens to Neon Indian, that's enough country for a year.
True.
Yeah, so I mean it's not awful. I'll give him that.
So here's the thing. It's funny you mentioned that because I kind of clocked out about like four songs in around and I started listening from the bottom up. And that's actually sort of interesting. I think Ocean and Mansion, The Thing That Wrecks You, are kind of like a really good set of three songs at the very end, if you can wade through all of that. Baby, look at me and swear you won't lose me. Here you are next to me. So much beauty at my feet. All I wanna do is swim, but the waves keep crashing in. No, I'm not afraid to drown. Take me out, take me down. I'm so tired of the shore. Let me interesting. So I literally guess I'm like I'm swimming through this ocean of, oh my god, I'm throwing telecasters out the way and banjos and shit. Get these boots out of my face. I'm not doing no land dancing. I'm saving all of my offensiveness for No Chill Island. We're getting through a country review pretty unscathed. So let's just continue this.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
So I'll give you that.
Yeah. Arbitrary scale. I'd say like the title track Ocean at the very end. I'm honestly
gonna listen to it. Like I don't want to, but I will listen to it.
Yeah.
So this is
get some fights.
All right. So this is solid. Colorado Avalanche versus Detroit Red Wings. Game six of the 96 Western Conference Finals in NHL in hockey. This fight was so legendary that for like the next 5 years they kept fighting every time they saw each other, and it was beautiful. And there was 46 penalties, totaling 228 minutes, which for an average penalty is 2 minutes. So for an entire
an
team,
average game is
an average game is 60 minutes because it's 320 minute periods.
All right.
But then if you go overtime or shootouts, whatever. But they had 228 minutes total of penalties. That's how beautiful this fight was. And it was like glory. There was blood drawn, teeth are lost, dude's face for penalty. There was a goalie fight. You know, two goalies fight that's some good shit. Right,
that's
there.
Almost four games worth of suspension of penalties.
Yeah. Yeah, four games with the penalties. But I'm not. But there's better and worse, and we'll get to those later on.
This is the Knicks versus Heat in that 98
game.
Is it the 90s? Yeah. Make the NBA raunchy again.
Yeah, that's. I think that's what Ron Artest said. If he was there, he's going to break a table over someone's head, I think. Wasn't that though?
No, this is a totally different one.
Okay. This remember is him when, talking about, I'm going to grab a table leg and stab someone with a table leg.
This is. Hold, dude. This is old Jeff Van Gundy.
Oh, shit. I remember that.
Young Jeff Van Gundy. Eastern Conference playoffs. Basically...
Something I haven't heard in a very long time.
Clinging onto life, onto Lonzo Mourning's legs.
This is back when basketball was good. Back when they wore shorts that were shorter than swim trunks.
Back when their shorts were like basically mesh booty shorts.
Pretty much.
Nut hugger jeans. No.
God, that's beautiful. All right.
So this is a very interesting one. Sean, thank you for throwing this on.
Yeah, so Taylor Swift, her old record label is low-key holding her hostage.
Yeah.
So apparently she pleaded to fans and stuff, or like on her social media, saying that Borchetta, her old record label, or Braun and Borchetta, said that they won't let her perform her old songs at the VMAs and other stuff.
Yeah.
Which is low-key holding her hostage. As much as I don't like her music, I think she's really whack, she doesn't know what she's talking about
this
most of the time.
This is a musician being mistreated by people in the industry.
But yeah. I'll be on her side for this one. Yeah. Because no record label should ever hold an artist at their discretion of what they want them to play. This is where I really like Dirty Hit, which is the 1975 and a couple others artist label. Where
let
they
me know
say,
when checks come, Sean.
What?
Let me know when checks come.
They will come in one day. They let them play pretty much whatever they want. They can go any direction, anything, and that's what a label should do. Should support the artist and saying and really kind of deflecting the media around them, saying, hey, we're supporting them and what they want to do as an artist. Not, no, fuck you, we want money, play your new stuff because that's what's going to get us more money than playing your old stuff, but your old stuff is better than your new stuff, but fuck you.
Right.
That's pretty much what's going on. So I kind of feel bad for her about it. It's getting really, really public and bad to where now there's a lot of musical artists taking side and shit where people are like, I'm taking side of Taylor or I'm taking side of the record label. And like even AOC talked about this shit, which is kind of crazy.
I didn't even see that. That's amazing.
Yeah, which I'm like, this is wild.
Yeah, so they're refusing to let her perform her hits. What's the other random part of this that I saw that was weird? They responded saying that in no way we didn't say that Taylor couldn't perform at the NRA at the NRAs the AMAs or block her Netflix special.
Freudian slip there.
And it goes on to argue that Swift has admitted to contractually owing millions of dollars and multiple assets to our company, the assets presumably being her old masters, and that despite our persistent efforts to find a privately and mutually satisfactory solution, Taylor made a unilateral decision last night to enlist her fan base in a calculated manner that greatly affects the safety of our employees and their families, which results in the fact that Taylor Swift fans started doxing people who worked at the company.
That's kind of wild. Oh, damn. Mobilize troops. Like, Autobots roll out.
Why can't we just get this kind of protest for democracy?
Fucking A, dude, seriously. You're telling me.
Oh my
man.
God. Like if
we you know
were,
how much shit would get done?
Like if we were doxing Trump advisors, allegedly, politically, allegedly. We would get so much work done as a society, but anyways.
You know, if he doxed Rudy Giuliani, you know how lit that would be? Anyways.
First of all you need to do is to dox Rudy Giuliani is work at Apple Store.
Deadass. It's not that hard.
Anyways, speaking of, we hate to give it to them, but Migos have won their lawsuit over Walk It Like I Talk It.
Did they preview this? Never mind.
What?
No, that's getting bleeped.
What no I was gonna island.
No, yeah, exactly.
No Chill Island. Maybe save it for, anyways. Walk It Like I Talk It were sued over a 2008 song called Walk It Like I Talk It. And the Migos song is called Walk It Talk It. So without the like I in the middle, if for getting all Vanilla Ice about it. But basically, the judge ruled that the only thing that's similar about the song are the words, and you can't, like, trademark words in a song.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, Pharrell Williams would be, like, making bank off of the anytime someone said happy or...
Woo!
Yeah, or many of the other horrible things that Pharrell Williams
has said. And I was like, so what's bleepy about that? Circumvent, motherfucker.
So...
are you on guitar? Or,
no, that's fine.
No, yeah, that's good enough. So Spike Lee is going to direct a hip-hop version of Romeo and Juliet, which is going to be set in the 80s. It's called Prince of Cats. It's going to be interesting.
Okay, Spike.
I'm down, but oh, yeah, literally about the same thing. Okay, Spike.
His last project was Black Klansman, which was...
I never saw, actually.
...widely acclaimed, pretty good. It was all right.
I know people that liked it. I know people that hated it.
I'm not the biggest fan of Spike Lee.
Yeah,
it was like a fine film.
Okay. Because I know hella big fans of Spike Lee. I know people are like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's go on to our third and last album. DJ Shadows, Our Pathetic Age. 26 long, an hour and 31 minutes. Fucking A, man.
Damn it, boy.
Damn it, boy. This is where I hate double albums. Because it is a double album.
This is a double album.
And it's bad for fans. And this is where... It is literally bad for fans because it is two completely separate fucking works.
Yeah.
Completely different one. The first one is very experimental, it's electronic, weird. I like it. Other one is hip-hop? Super hip-hop? De La Soul? Nas? Ghostface Killa? What the hell? Run the Jewels?
Fantastic Negrito?
Pusha T? It's just, it goes
Dave
on.
East,
this is, as a reviewer, a fucking nightmare because we have to review two albums in one. So let's go.
And in addition to reviewing Lady Antebellum, which was its own special sort of interesting problem, and then Little Peep's album, which was pretty long as well.
Then we have a goddamn double album. Don't make double albums, artists. It's bad for fans. Bad for you, it's bad for us, and mainly it's bad for us.
Yeah, so mostly it's bad for us. So, but before we talk about the content of the album really fast, we've seen in 2019 a year of a couple different approaches to double albums.
Correct.
We kind of have the memory scarred in our lives of 2017 of Trap, where we had
3 hour long albums of I Want to Actually Murder Myself.
We had triple albums when we're talking about Ray Shremmerd's album, Culture 2. We had all this. It was really
Drake
bad.
Did one. It was just horrible.
And there have been albums this year that we just like, oh, too long, I'm not going to do it. Sorry.
Yeah.
There's that way of doing albums that we mostly don't like. There's the Foles way of doing albums where you like.
You just set one in the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, and I really, really like that. Then there's like Anderson .Paak way, which is you have. Two years separating them. Or a year separating them.
It's not really a year separating them. It's like a couple, or 5 or 6 months separating them. You'd say it's like the Foles way. Anderson .Paak / Foles way.
The 1975, which is a whole year.
But here's the thing. The 1975 I'm not going to comment on too much because as of this time of recording this review, I don't know how Notes in a Conditional Form sounds like.
Yes,
it's supposed to be the last half of like the other album, but so far a lot of it sounds pretty different.
Yeah, exactly.
Foles, the difference between part one and part two, the difference are subtle.
Subtle, but it's a it definitely works.
Anderson .Paak, the differences are a little bit more pronounced, but you can definitely tell it's Anderson .Paak.
You can tell this is the same recording style. Yeah.
This is like
eating a banana to getting run over as a squirrel. Like these are told two different things. Most a random thing I can think of.
This is like back when we had Class Warrior Joe Rogan who was saying completely impossible. like that clip where Joe Rogan's like, it's completely ridiculous that we have women who are like carrying babies on the border and we don't let them in because we draw lines in the sand. It's ridiculous. When we had like ANCAP Joe Rogan all the way to like classical liberal Joe Rogan. It's like two completely separate things.
No, it's Pete Buttigieg saying, hey, I think Medicare for All is a good idea. And then circumvent a few months later, no government provider should tell you can get rid of your private insurance. That's what this is.
I'm just glad Pete Buttigieg just has a policy he can name instead of like a platitude he's talking about. He's like Obama without the spunk.
Never mind.
The DJ Shadow, this is a really like career spanning project because there's a lot of stuff that sounds like his older stuff, like from Introducing, which is like goes back a while and was really good. And you have some really interesting songs here that are experimental, like Intersectionality does a lot. We'll be right back.
Rosie is wild.
Rosie is
an amazing track in its own, because there's one point where it's the sounds, it sounds like there's really strobe lights in your ears, and I had to take off my headphones for a little bit. I'm like, this kind of hurts. But then the second half of Rosie, it goes into this really funky bass line with drums over it, and I'm like, ooh, yeah. I can groove to this
like,
right now.
It's jazzy, it's electronic.
It's good.
Juggernaut's a little too wild for me.
Oh, no. The wildest one is Beauty, Power, Motion, Life, Work, Chaos, Law. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier.
Sailor, Rich Man, Poor Man, Beggar Man, Thief.
Yeah, it's that, the track four is just literally
I'm
just
bored.
Sounds. It's like, I'm bored, I want to do different things. I'm like, dude.
And then that leads into Juggernaut, and Firestorm, like, is almost like a latter part of it. It's like the remains, like the nuclear fallout.
Yeah, because that one has that little piano on it. But I'm like, yeah. Those two songs, I'm like, dude, I'm like, I can't. This is way too much sound.
Yeah.
I'm always for experimentation, but there's a time where I'm like, okay, you need to chill. But then it goes to Waitlist, Rosie, If I Died Today. Good tracks.
Yeah.
It's very experimental, different, which I'm always on board for. And then disc two.
disc two, fight.
Disc two, drone warfare. Feet Nas and Pharaoh Monk. I'm like, this is a very different thing. I'm all for it because you know me and drones.
Yeah.
I always yell about them.
Then we go hard in the paint. Side. Up the game untouched. Got brothers who never made it out, bad luck. Got niggas who never seen handcuffs. We got older, their sons got locked up. That's karma. Daughters are popped up, knocked up. Brothers my age already, grandfathers be on the block drunk. Cameras and drones are watching. They stealing our body parts as Jones and Monchin. Check my beautiful matte black Kevlar suit, suitable for a war with hazmat. The NASDAQ and big pharmaceutical. Ex-military, military grade, ballistic expert with blood under my cuticles. You already know the issues, the American atrocities. So when you squeeze that, I shoot at the drones with shoulder missiles. And then, first off, my favorite song on the whole thing is Rocket Fuel with De La Soul. That's going on my workout list. I'm playing that song at work. That song is okay, but God, De La Soul is so Uncle Rappy.
Oh, it's hilarious. But this is like, it just sounds like it's straight from like 1992.
Yeah, it does.
It's so funny.
So like, I have basically, the trend with all of these albums that we reviewed today is that I like the latter half of it. But the problem is Our Pathetic Age has two latter halves. So I like the latter half of disc the jazz
one.
Part.
Yes,
so like
one.
From We're Always Alone was a nice like sort of outro up to maybe Rosie is really good.
Exactly.
And then like Intersectionality is pretty great. Sling Braids, whatever. But like Intersectionality from the top is really good.
Yes.
And then the second part, I'm kind of fine with all those ones you had right there that you said.
Warfare, Rain on Snow.
They come in pretty hard in the paint.
Yeah.
But right when we get to Small Colleges and JoJo's World.
JoJo's World isn't a good track.
JoJo's World is a very good track.
Really?
Yeah, fuck off. JoJo's World is an incredible track.
I think it was kind of whatever the lyrics,
it's like. Like
Honestly, because of how long it was, I literally am like, I can't. This is too much sound.
No, JoJo's World.
I'll have to look at this.
The lyrics are really deep and intense.
I think because my problem is King of Queens was right after that.
Yeah, and like,
and I really like King of Queens.
It kind of represents a whole turn in the album where it gets like, well,
definitely
the turn thematically goes from, because DJ Shadow, in addition to his like past, he's just like the soundtrack for all of the really like cool TV shows and movies now. So a lot of these rap songs are going to be like the soundtrack for like fucking Logan Roy's torture playlist. But like, it's all going to be. Some of these songs deal with a lot of deepness and emotional loss and sorrow, especially from a masculine point of view, which is interesting. But it goes really deep in that, and it's been a really good theme of 2019 where musicians have done this sort of thing. And it starts from Small Colleges down through JoJo's World, Kings and Koreans, which is like, I can't wait for 2020. We're going to probably get Run the Jewels 4.
Dude, that song goes so fucking hard. Cliff, little bitch, for the foundation, make a quick wish. RTJ, no fall from grace. Have a great day, get the bag, get away. Hey.
Mama, also the Levy and Shonda, but we live by Betty and that story heavy. Yeah, but right now the
cause it's five finger Freddy. Who worked for Big Eddie, who drove in a Chevy, the colors forget it.
Yeah, I love that track. I can't wait for it. Yeah, New Run the Jewels.
2020 is gonna be a banger.
I'm telling you, every even year of music is ridiculous.
It's funny because every odd episode of Audio Face is better than the even ones.
No, you can go fucking. You can fuck off for all I care. You can fuck off for all I care. Anyways, this is okay. Please, for a double album, it's good. But goddamn, my brain
also,
hurts.
Can I say urgent, important? Please read. I had to Google all of the artists that work on here. I'd never heard of Tafe Poe, Damon, or Rockwell Knuckles before.
Yeah, I don't know
any
of those.
Fuck of a track. That's.
I have no idea who the hell. Yeah, I don't know any of those guys were.
Like it's like one of those education kind of. Mathematics mm-hmm. kind of songs. It's really good.
It's a simple mathematics. Yeah.
If I could summarize it, like this, sometimes this album is kind of annoying, but it's
for
never
sure.
boring.
No,
it's just a jumbled up like it's this weird potpourri of
is
songs.
Too many that, ideas.
Yeah,
as one of our favorite ideas. People says, it is too many ideas to where it just cut a few and it'll be good. So
yeah. And so, by the way, Our Pathetic Age is a really interesting way to end the album. That's really funny. The bonus track with Pusha T is fine, but Jesus Christ, I don't know where you would put in the album because it doesn't make sense. Two Notes is also very good, but you don't need Taxin. It's just a longer version of the bonus track. It's fine. Arbitrary Scale, you know I'm going in for it. It's Malice in the Palace, baby. This is one of the most legendary fights. We talked about this, and this is why we kind of disputed it, because we've done this on Audio Face before, but whatever album we talked about this being Malice of the Palace of, this is at least as good with, but it's also just like way too much sauce. Because Ron Artest, even
Ron,
today,
Ron, baby,
I've met and have pictures with Metta World Peace. If you look at my Instagram at Dan from the Internet, but I can attest, he can attest that he went really hard when he was on the Indiana Pacers and he jumped into the stands. Started smacking a kid, smacking a guy who threw like a Coca-Cola on him. Nine players were suspended.
11, was it like 11 mil or something?
Listen, 11 million salaries lost no players, but listen for the time. Nine players were suspended for a total of 146 games. That's total of two NBA seasons.
Oh my God.
Five players were charged with assault.
Assault.
And several fans were banned from Pistons home games for life. Yeah. They're still not going to Pistons home games for that shit. This is also number one. What's yours?
This right here, baby. Just look on the screen. Goalie spining, motherfucker. This is, I remember watching this shit.
This is Rick DiPietro, Brent Johnson.
Yeah, this is New York Islanders versus Pittsburgh Penguins. 2004, I believe, and it is
17 minutes.
Oh my God! It is just 17 minutes of fighting, just
full frontal nudity.
An entire period worth of just straight up fighting. It was actually this was not 04. This was 07. 15 fighting majors, 21 game misconducts, 346 minutes of penalty time, 65 penalties were given. And that's when, okay, so Rick DiPietro was a goalie for the New York Islanders. And this was literally like, after this game, his career just downfalled. And now he's retired. And his contract was so bad that he's getting paid $1 million a year to sit on his couch and do nothing. That's how legendary a fight this one was.
He pulled a WeWork.
He pulled a straight up WeWork. Yep. That's how legendary that was.
Damn it, boy.
Damn it, boy.
That's amazing. Okay, and lastly, because we like to end the public version of Audio Face on a fun note before we go to the members only, super saucy, super deluxe, raunchy,
yes.
Available for everyone, actually, no chill island. Neil Young's U.S. citizenship as application has been delayed, he's a Canadian citizen,
yes.
He's been delayed by applying for U.S. citizenship because he allegedly may lack good moral character because he smokes weed.
Because he smoked the herb.
Yeah.
America's most blunted.
He's 73 years old. He's been trying to be a dual U.S. Canadian citizen
for
decades at this point.
Say, dude, forever.
He wants to be able to vote, but he smokes weed, so we can't have that.
Well, this country, man. This stupid fucking country.
That's supposed to be the fun note.
It's hilariously bad.
It's just so
you can't get your citizenship because you smoked the herb.
You can't get your citizenship because you smoke herb. You can't get your citizenship because we use you for labor. You can't get your citizenship.
And you can't even unionize? Now you get the point.
Got that.
This is a terrible country, but this is a really... I love they include that horn there. It's really choice.
So smart.
Next up in No Chill Island, we have Tyler the Creator stuff. We have Kanye West stuff.
We have Drake getting booed off the stage.
We have fun for the whole family.
We've got everything.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the idea behind No Chill Island, of course, is it is a test with what you can and can't say in 2019, now 2020.
Which is, there's a lot you can't say anymore.
Yeah.
The line is getting smaller and smaller.
The line is getting thinner, which means it is more of a gentleman's sport.
What is dueling? Yeah. Oh, our pistols out?
Yeah, it's kind of like a helicopter contest, if you will. So, oh, Flogna.
I was going to get to why the hell do you call a festival Flogna?
Because it's golf lying backwards.
That also sounds like a really racial slur to a Scottish person. I'm going to fuck, because you know when they get flogged all the time back in the day by your people, the Redcoats, who just start beating the shit out of them. Because, you know, anybody who doesn't speak proper English is inferior in their minds.
Okay, you know what? They get to stay in the Union. They're fine.
they didn't want to be in the Union.
No, the European Union. That one they do want to be in.
Oh, well, so, yeah.
Drake was the surprise headliner at Camp Flogna, Tyler the Creator's music festival that happened
and
existed.
That's such a shitty name.
It's been happening for a couple years now. People really like it. And a lot of the fans were expecting Frank Ocean to be the guest. Why were they expecting this? For no goddamn reason at all. But when Tyler the Creator that was the rumor. It was never announced. Tyler the Creator never talked about this publicly. But when Drake came out, not just for three songs, but he was like, okay, I'm about to perform a whole show.
He got booed off stage.
He got booed off stage again.
At Dodger fucking Stadium, bud. All those Latinos go over there and be like, boo, we don't want you, Drake. You're so bad, Drake. Get off stage.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, that's so on the line. you.
Oh, not lying, baby.
So of course no one didn't want to see Drake. Drake was apparently.
Of course no one wants to see Drake.
Drake said, like I said, I'm here for you. If you want to keep me going, I'll keep going. The remark was met with people booing and shouting no, leaving for him to bail on set. It's been love. I go by the name of Drake. Thank you for having me. As he walked off stage, tail between his legs.
Oh my God!
Shriveling into his belly button.
Oh my God! He straight got turtled. If you want me to keep going, I'll keep going. Everyone in unison. No!
Like anime speech bubble. No.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like that courtroom objection. Objection. Just like, no.
No. Just big speech bubble.
So, Tyler the Creator then criticized his fans, saying they were entitled and trash, talking about all the attendees who booed Drake.
I mean, first off, you're whack, but we'll get over it.
So Tyler the Creator said that he thought bringing one of the biggest artists on the fucking planet to a music festival would be fire. His fans definitely disagreed because Drake is trash.
And Tyler's stupid for thinking that people would be all over Drake.
Yes.
Because people like Tyler the Creator music do not like Drake music.
Okay, first of all, there's a bit of an overlap, but not that much of an overlap.
Yeah.
Second of all, Tyler the Creator is wrong for thinking that his fans would like Drake. His fans are wrong for thinking that Frank Ocean would be there and not Drake.
Exactly.
So it's not like anyone's, like, there's a lot of bad actors.
The only person at fault is Drake for just being there and being Drake.
Yeah.
And getting booed off stage.
Tyler the Creator did clarify and said, mostly everyone was having a great time. Those shits in the front area were the ones being mad rude, which I can see right, but nah, fuck that. Y'all represented me and flogged to my guest and made me look so entitled and trash. That shit was like mob mentality and cancel culture in real life. I think that shit is fucking trash.
It's not cancel culture.
No, it's not cancel culture.
That's not cancel culture. All right, I have a problem with cancel culture, but that's not it. That's just saying that this dude sucks and get him off stage.
Tyler the Creator, you whiny little negroid. You don't know the first thing about cancel culture. The first thing about cancel culture is all of your bullshit history where you're saying all this raunchy shit in the past just to get to hear it.
Didn't he bash homos all the time and stuff too.
Yeah, that was kind of his thing. Even though he
even
was
though
like,
he's like sucking dick in a corner.
Even though he was like lining up redneck dick this side of Tulsa, like Oklahoma, talking about like sucking schlongs this side of anywhere near Adult Swim's.
I mean, you know, he's getting Eiffel Towered and fist at the same time. I mean, he got a new record for how many fists he can put up his butt. That's how gay he is.
Okay, wait. There's leeway I have that you don't. So fuck off. So Drake responded to this and said that he responded being booed off stage, and he said, plot twist, just signed a 10-year residency at Camp Flogna. Sorry, kid. See you every single year till you're 30.
Well, if you see a decline in the participation and the people that go to Camp Flogna, Scottish racism, then you know that he sucks. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Camp Flog Scott?
Camp Flog Scott, yep. Okay.
Anyways, by the way, there's just a joke. There's no such thing as residencies at Camp Flogna. That doesn't make sense. Drake was making fun of the fact that the people who hate his music are young and the people who consume the music the most. Drake just made fun of his demise?
Yeah, Drake literally just made fun of... he did the, nah, not you, but me. What? That's pretty much it. You know those stupid people on middle school campuses that try to make a good joke, but they end up reflecting it on themselves? That's pretty much what he did.
Yeah, bullet fodder.
All right, so
Hashtag no politics.
Yeah,
no, that happened in Jenks District, right?
Tell me what happened in Jenks District. Was there a school shooting in Jenks District?
Yeah, some kid's spleens got shot over in Jenks District.
What district is he?
He claims to be in 25th, but I don't think he lives in that district.
So I don't think he lives in 25th.
I think he's a carpetbagger.
But that's so really racist.
No, it's not racist. That's a political term.
Oh, it is?
That's a political term for when Muslims... I'm going to reload the jet gun. Because there's more coming, Buffalo. All right, so Stormy Daniels.
Get ready, bucko. Saddle up, partner.
The last of Flogna-related news. YG was there, and Stormy Daniels performed with YG to play the song
what
Fuck
she,
Donald
never
Trump.
Mind. Dad, we already had fine tooth comb enough. I was gonna say something bad, but
no, go ahead.
I was gonna say, what did she perform?
Yeah, she performed Fuck Donald Trump.
She performed anything else? Stupid. Anything. But that's hilarious, actually.
Bum, 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 wow. Thankfully she didn't perform it with Donald Trump on stage. Anyways.
That's a dick I do not want to fucking ever think about again in my life.
Okay, it's not even real. Never mind.
My name, anyway, she said, my name is Stormy fucking Daniels, and I am the reason Donald Trump is fucked. No, you're not. But okay. When YG asked if she had sex with Trump, she replied, no, I just laid there. I'm like...
For the Republican Party.
So I'm like, well, so what's rapey about that?
Oh, jeez. So, it's time to go to the Audio Face Jail Corner, DM Evans and Associates.
This makes me way too happy. So rapper
Kodak Black has been hit with two new felony charges, faces 60 years NL clink, in addition to 46 months he's already facing
in federal prison, correct? Yes. Like the big clink. Not state penitentiary, federal penitentiary.
Fed clink.
Like Fed link, and I'll say clink, Fed clink. That shit where they take this scared straight program into Fed clink, and they're like, oh, no.
The difference between state and federal is the difference between Vaseline and Ovaltine.
Is the difference between which soap you need to drop.
Yeah. The difference between,
Mexicans got on boots.
No, before we were talking about flogging Scots, now we're going to be talking about Irish Spring, if you know what I mean.
Oh, God. You got the fucking IRA involved, damn.
Get the IRA all up in that anus. Anyways, 3 days ago, or like this week, the rapper received a 46-month prison sentence after pleading guilty to federal weapons charges.
So it turns out that AK with the scope is real dirty.
A day later, it came to light that he'd sent a prison guard to the hospital after grabbing his testicles in a fight.
First off,
me to grab you in the nuts?
How much of a pussy are you to grab a dude in the nuts in a fight? That's like bro code. You don't hit each other nuts.
Okay,
you go man to man, you fight each other, you can get boots, Mexicans got on boots, but you don't wrap your hands around a dude's nuts and squeeze until he squeals.
Is it different when they're in jail? Well, because jail, we're talking about the bondage of a man without a safe word. And this is before the other charges in federal. So this is even before the peanut butter and jelly gets involved in that. This is a different safe word.
I like to put some peanut butter and jelly.
Kodak black and blue.
Kodak sandwich. Basically, he gonna get it.
Yeah.
You're not gonna be hearing from him for a while. Next time when he comes out, his pitch and his voice may be a little bit higher next time we talk to him.
Oh my god. It's currently unclear whether the new sentences would be served consecutively or simultaneously, but it's pretty sure he's probably not gonna be out until like they have like razors that fold four ways.
He's gone for a while. We're not gonna be hearing Matt Colder Black until his jail sentence then. Alright, goodbye.
This has been Audio Face Crime, brought to you by DM Evans and Associates Legal Corner.
Anyways, now we bring to you by...
We're
going back to jail, but this is now Peter Sean Corner of the Audio Face podcast of No Chill Island, where we go and talk about Young Jesus Christ, our fake Lord and Savior. And
Kanye West.
Yes. So Kanye goes into a Houston jail. There's a surprise performance, and he says, this is a mission, not a show. A mission as in what the Spanish did to the Native Americans. We're like, you know what? We're going to make some missions out here in California. Sounds good. You know what? Catholicism, bitch. You could apologize.
It's like hitting you with a crowbar, but it's a cross. Like it's a cross, exactly.
Literally, it's like, you will like Jesus. And they're like, I don't know. Like, what is a Spaniard? No. And they're just getting fucked in there with the cross.
Yeah.
Kanye, that's like when George Bush said, we're going to make a crusade. You don't say crusade because that's how you start jihad.
So basically, Kanye West is in Houston for a reason we'll get to in a couple seconds. And he performed at a prison. He performed for...
Which is fine.
He performed for 200 of, I guess, the good ones.
Good behaviors.
Yeah, the good ones, because this is a racist prison industrial complex that is kept to keep black people down and then keep companies like the Geo Group making billions of dollars in profits while the government enslaves kids at the border. Kanye West will play for 200 of the nicest behaving.
Yes, the behaviorals. The
behaviorals at the prison, and then a couple of the women who are at the prison too. It was two separate concerts. So that was cool. That was there. The reason he was in Houston to partake in his mission is because he is going to perform at Joel Osteen's mega church. He's going to do a Sunday service. And it's funny because
he is now nominated for the Coldplay, the inaugural Coldplay Sellout Award.
But here's the thing. You want to know the best part about this?
Yes.
Because even though, I love your opening article about this, even though tickets to the Sunday service are free, scalpers are managing to sell tickets to Kanye West Sunday service for Jesus at Joel Osteen's Lakewood mega church in Houston, fuck all, Texas.
These people are not Christians. They are just schmoozling you into making money. I don't think Kanye...
At least the scalpers are honest about it.
At least the scalpers are honest about their shittiness. They're like, you know what? I'm trying to make a quick buck on Jesus. I may not agree with it, but you know, hey, this is my religion, money.
On Jesus, I'll make a quick buck on Beck. Like, I don't care. Like.
Exactly. Money is money. You know, that's how it is. But these two fucking goons over here.
Kanye West and Joel Osteen.
Especially Joel Osteen. Oh my God.
Okay, Joel Osteen's face looked like he gets like anally by goats. Like, he looks like he has that face where, like, I wonder if Gavin Newsom could give me the old Gherpin slurp while I'm on the farm somewhere underneath
He probably milks Daniel Nunes' cow and gets fucked by him about 45 times.
Joel Osteen probably has some, like, thing in his house where, like, he's held by a ceiling fan from his cock with a fleshlight just holding him as he's spinning around with his
dick. He likes getting Django'd by his gay partner.
Jesus.
Anyways, these guys aren't Christians. Kanye has probably never read anything out of the Old or New Testament. If he read the Old Testament, he'd be like, whoa, this shit's crazy.
But I don't think this shit's like the stuff Jay-Z used to rap about,
But he's probably so dumb he doesn't know how to read.
I don't think Kanye knows anything how to, definitely does not know how to read, especially doesn't know how to read any of the medication he's taking.
Exactly. So he's probably overdosing. And yeah.
So speaking of making money off of miracles, Lil Reese was shot in Chicago in the neck this week. He was in critical condition.
He got
pee-pewed. Yeah, but he recently made it out alive in the hospital. He was on Instagram Live saying that if anyone would like an interview as to what happened with him, they'll have to pay a cool $1 million.
Okay, he staged this shot then. He paid someone to shoot him in the neck just the precise place that he won't die from it, just so he can get $1 million.
No, because, God, that stitch is too similar to some shit I recognize. That's
oh! It's real out here.
That's some pretty rough shit. This is no chill island, so we're gonna have to put that picture in the
middle. Oh, you're 100% gonna put it. So right here. You see the incision right here? This is his neck. That's where the bullet entered his larynx and went outside the other side. And the doctor had to get a little scalpel, get it out, get a little fragments out, and tap it back up. But this dude wants a cool mill for an interview.
Yeah, for a media interview.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
So someone eventually added Vlad TV. You know?
Vlad TV.
You know, like, world star number three.
Yeah, no, I know Vlad TV. Okay.
But the funny thing is, someone said, Vlad, gonna try to get that Lil Reese interview by any means. And Reese said that, Vlad said, very happy you survived the shooting, but nobody's gonna even pay you 1% of $1 million for that interview.
Nope.
Because here's the thing. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask a media company for money.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask a media company for money when other people get shot all the time, go on the news for free.
VR media couldn't even make money off of a media company. How do they think that the media...
Holy shit.
How do they think?
This invasion... that decided to shoot him in his larynx. Yeah, that's super bleeped. Please bleep that. Like, oh my God, I need to do Coldplay. It's 1 o'clock. I want to play Xbox. Jesus Christ.
Content's got to get made somehow, buddy.
Let's just fucking rapid fire this shit.
No.
Oh no.
No.
Oh no. 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 Oh no. It gets worse. This cracker did it. No. No. Oh, no. No.
Wait.
No. You can't. You gotta record right now. You can't. No. No. Who's it? What?
Okay, so Eminem.
No!
Eminem is a little bit in trouble because of a leaked track from 2009 where apparently it seems like he is condoning the beating.
The beating that Chris Brown did to Rihanna, beat her face into a pulp. Apparently the song was in defense of Chris Brown. Christopher Brown. I'm not playing Rihanna. Where'd you get the VD at? As he raps, let me add my 2 cents. Of course, I side with Chris Brown. I'd beat a bitch down too.
Eminem spokesperson told XXL, this is a leak of something that was over 10 years old. After Eminem recorded it, he scrapped it and rewrote it.
I don't give a shit if it's 10 years old. You can't say I'm gonna beat a bitch too. That's some XXXTentacion, I'm gonna fork her level style of stuff.
Obviously he and Rihanna have a great relationship.
Oh, I don't think so anymore, dude. If Rihanna somehow still performs with Eminem, then this is when a girl can get the Not a Little Bitch award if she does that. Because now you're on self defense, girl. You gotta
Rihanna's
give the middle fingers out.
Rihanna's gonna beat the motherfucker with a bat.
And she's gotta go all fucking Crenshaw
impale
style.
Him. You gotta impale him with a chair.
She's gotta go Crenshaw style and curb stomp him left foot across the cheek with a stiletto in the hand, beating his heart.
Flawless.
Exactly. Eminem, that is horrible, and you can't do that. No.
Yeah. Eminem, you...
Just stop. Anyway, so Lizzo sued again.
Again? So what had happened was, let me explain the story.
Please.
Lizzo tweeted out, as many celebrities do, when they're upset.
I'm drinking upset.
Because remember, when you're a celebrity and you've been a breed like a normal person,
yes.
you don't just get to go to the manager. You get to go to Twitter. Exactly. And you get to put some poor, regular, menial gig economy worker on blast yep. because they maybe made some minor mistake on your order that you're completely misunderstanding. And so, of course, this happens where Lizzo ordered something from Postmates. And apparently the food didn't get to her completely. And so she said the driver ate the food, put the driver's name on blast on social media. This driver, as what happens when celebrities do this, got doxxed the shit out of.
Oh, yeah.
And,
why can't we do this for a fucking government, man? I'm telling you.
Turns out that, she, like, didn't mean to do that. And the driver is suing her for libel because she's saying that I didn't steal the sandwich. Apparently, this is the closest thing to a legal delivery saying that Lizzo and her ate it before she realized it. And so, like, she pulled a Patrick, I think I'll eat it now. But she couldn't see it because some
Wait, did she deadass say that she forgot that she ate the food?
No, but this is all about food that supposedly never showed up. And this woman's saying that that's a lie, that I delivered the food. But Lizzo's saying that the food was already gone. So I'm just saying maybe the bitch ate really quickly.
I'm a fitness professional, so I'm not allowed to comment on these situations. But I am allowed to call Moby a lot of words.
You
a lot of words.
Yeah.
So, okay, we already did a No Chill Island segment a little bit back when he put vegan for life, that fucking really stupid tattoo right here on his neck. Now this stupid little pedophile and ass, diddling kids probably,
diddling presidents, actually.
Diddling presidents, who's also diddles kids, got animal rights right here on his...
Tattooed on his arms.
Tattooed on his arms in big block letters. Dude, you really need to kill yourself. Really need to kill yourself for that. Like, there's no coming back. You can't get rid of
those.
The
shitty thing is that, like, we can't even use, like, what is it, Moby's, like, rapey leather skin to, like, repurpose it into a bag or a shoe or anything, because it's gonna have, like, letters on it.
And who wants animal rights for a can bag? Like, that's not good look.
Actually, no. It would be a really great, like, instead of being an animal rights activist, you go, like, super hardcore PETA ass, and you get, like, a human skin bag that says animal rights on it.
Dude, that's like 8 layers deep. Dude. It's like, what are you wearing? I'm wearing Moby.
I'm wearing Moby's skin as a handbag. Are you vegan, bitch?
It's like, how vegan are you? Yes. What's your handbag? It's Moby animal rights, motherfucker. Get with the times. Get your own human bag.
Order now, and for 6 easy payments of $19.99, we'll give you the Moby fanny pack that says vegan for life, made out of his neck skin.
Oh my god, this is the worst No Chill Island ever.
And what if we replace Moby's face with Grimes' face? And then Elon Musk could finally come?
Are animal rights activists in Jenks District or what?
No, but Ben Shapiro is.
Is Ben Shapiro in his district?
Ben Shapiro lives in Jenks District.
How would Ben Shapiro feel for an anti-Semite to run his district and to talk about how Palestinian lives matters and that Benjamin Netanyahu needs to get skewed by the stake and gets bombed?
No, like, Jenks not even, like, hardcore. He barely even supports... He doesn't even, like,
I know. He doesn't support BDS because...
But Jenks is a Democrat, so therefore he's an anti-Semite.
Exactly. Because all Democrats are anti-Semites.
So that... Knowing that Cenk Uygur, Cenk Uygur, Justice Demeturk, is going to...
Justice Demeturk!
Owner of the Dimsdale Demeturk. This has been audio.
Dude, you're going to be editing for 7 hours. I hope you know that.
This has been Audio Face. The latest torpedo to hit the USS Career.
This is like the USS Arizona, 2nd, 1941, December 7th. I'm like, compute, that's Audio Face right now.
You can follow me on Twitter from the web and on Instagram at Dan from the internet. If there's something I said that offended you and really upset you, you should direct those messages to Sean at SW Suarez on Twitter or Instagram, even though right now he's currently going to those platforms.
I'm dead ass making my profile private for the next week.
You don't want Mike Cernovich to get in that booty hole?
No.
Mike Cernovich and George Papadopoulos, Trump's dumbass, literally the dumbass who made the Russia conspiracy happen.
Yes.
He's running against Cenk. It's going to be great. And a woman who is actually has a political career and is actually trying and is now getting her district completely blown over. But anyways, you can follow the show on AudioFacePod on Twitter or Instagram to get us, audioface.show. We're going to be doing some fun things with the website soon, things with the YouTube soon. Everything's going on. Sean's just ashamed. Make sure you are subscribed to this podcast because there's going to be a lot of really fun episodes throughout the rest of the year that are going to be way less offensive than this. This is probably the last one at Kill Island for a couple of months.
For like a year. This one is pretty bad.
This is the worst one.
Half of it isn't usable. Half of it's going to get cut. A third of it's going to get bleeped. There's going to be like 5 minutes of us talking. That's how bad this one was.
And which we is great because like we recorded kind of long.
It was like 45 minutes of it.
This whole recording is kind of long. When you see the end of runtime, you're going to kill me. And we have an episode to record after this. Thank you so much for listening. It's 1 o'clock. We will talk to you later. Cheers.
Bye.